You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. And this episode is brought to you in partnership with the California Prune Board. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialize in food and science. This podcast is called Feeling Fabulous Through Fiber, The Health Benefits of Dried Fruit. And we're joined by Jeanette Higgs, registered dietitian, Food to Fit.
Hello.
And Kevin Verbruggen, European Marketing Director for the California Prune Board.
Hello.
So, Jeanette, as a nutritionist, tell us all about California prunes and their kind of overall health profile.
The most notable feature about prunes, which most people know, is that their benefits on digestion. It's a feature that's been recognised throughout history. So it's no surprise, really, that prunes have an authorised health claim under the strict EU health claims process. In fact, they're the only natural whole fruit to have actually achieved a health claim. And that is that if we eat 100 grams of prunes daily, this will contribute to normal bowel function. Now, prunes, we need a lot more research to really definitively say how they work on digestion, but it's a combination of factors. Prunes are very high in fibre. They're about 7% fibre. And they're also one of the highest of common foods in terms of sorbitol. They're also rich in polyphenols, particularly chlorogenic acid and neochlorogenic acid. And what we think is that it's a combination of these things makes them capable of having a prebiotic effect in the gut and provide valuable fermentation substrate for the bacteria in our gut. And it's through that process that they have this wonderful digestive benefit. So aside from that, prunes, what we should say is that they're a fruit and they're a natural fruit, so that they have no added sugar, which is a surprise to a lot of people because they taste nice and sweet. They're also completely fat-free, saturated fat-free, salt-free. And in addition, like other fruits, they have a wide range of vitamins and minerals as well. So they're high in vitamin K, and also they're a source of manganese. And both of these are important for normal bone maintenance. They're high in potassium, which is important, of course, for our muscles and blood pressure. They're a source of copper, which is important for protecting cells from oxidative damage. And they're also a source of vitamin B6, which, as a lot of people know, is helpful in terms of reducing tiredness and fatigue and making healthy blood cells and also normal hormone levels. So, and they have a whole host of other phytonutrients as well, but all together they make quite a package for such a small fruit.
Now, there's been loads of research, a mountain and a continuing flow of evidence around the importance of gut health and the impact of it on overall health. Can you tell us a little bit more about why this is so important and its ramifications?
Yes, well, you've already interviewed lots of real research experts on this area, but just in a nutshell, just to summarise, the research on the whole in gut health and our gut microbiota is now in full swing. And although it's still an emerging area, we now know that the human body carries some 200 grams of bacteria. And this is throughout the body, in our mouth and nose, on our skin, urinary tract. But it's mostly concentrated in the gut. And the gut has some trillions of bacterial cells. And actually, most of this is concentrated in the colon. And every one of us has at least 160 different species. Now, our gut flora varies from person to person. Although it's quite stable over time, it can change with different things. But effectively, our gut microflora is like a fingerprint. It's individual to it and every one of us. And what we know is that it's not just bacteria in the gut. There are also fungi, viruses, and even parasites. And altogether, this it's like a symbiotic relationship, and we help each other to coexist. The composition of our microbiota is determined by a whole range of things, from our genes through our health, general health status. And our diet, of course, is very important. It's the most important influential factor, environmental factor, or a factor that can be modified by us.
I think the essential issue about this is that each of us is carrying around about 100 trillion little creatures with us, and they need to be looked after. They need to, think of them as little pets. As you say, there's a symbiotic relationship
exactly.
between them and yeah. us, and we need to feed them in the right way. Now, there are twists to this, though, because recently the pandemic has caused a lot of concerns around concepts like immunity, and it does seem that gut health is linked to the immune system. How is this? How does it work?
Okay, so our immune system provides the main defense against attack by infections or trauma, and obviously cancer cell growth. So our immune system has to recognize the difference between friendly and harmful agents. Now, the immune system is effectively our lymphatic system, so the glands like our tonsils, spleen, thymus, but 70% of the immune system is actually around the gut. This is the gut-associated lymphoid tissue. And naturally enough, our gut is our first line of defense for anything entering the body. So it makes sense that the immune system is interlinked with the gut. So there's many influences on our immune system. Again, it comes down to our genes, our age, hormonal status, our vaccination history, any early life events, and also things like how much we exercise, smoking, and our diet. And our diet is actually the most important influencer, both on the microbiome and on our immune status. And thinking in terms of, if you like, the pandemic, as we age, our immune system declines. But optimum nutrition can actually help maintain or optimize our immune system. So it's really important to have a very varied and balanced diet with plenty of plant foods, and this will help to optimize all those nutrients that are needed for a good immune system. And these nutrients include vitamins like vitamin A, B6, B12, vitamin C, D and E, and folate, trace elements such as zinc, iron, selenium, and copper, and also the omega-3 fatty acids. So if you think about all those nutrients, the best and the easiest way to do that is to really focus on a good plant-based diet. And this will benefit both our gut health and our immune system.
And it's all about feeding those 100 trillion creatures.
Exactly.
Inside
there. Yes.
Now with all the evidence that's emerging, I mean, although there is it's a vast area of research and getting bigger practically by the day, I think. Now, the results are relatively nebulous in terms of our actual specific understanding of gut health. And it seems that there are various specifics that apply to different people, but the one thing that you can really, really apply to everyone is that diversity in food sources and fiber sources is the most important thing, and that's the main thing we can say that kind of covers everyone at the moment. But why is this? What role does fiber play in supporting gut health?
At its very basic level, we used to think that fiber was a waste product; it went through the system. But actually, what we now know is that the dietary fiber and the range of fiber that we eat is really important in terms of providing, as you've said, Stefan, a couple of times, providing that valuable food to keep our gut microbiota happy. We keep our gut microbiota happy and our immune system is happy. And so we're healthier. and stay well. And what we also know is that looking at various studies, the dietary fibre has a significant role in chronic diseases, in reducing risk of chronic diseases. And these include things like cardiovascular disease, coronary events, type 2 diabetes, and colorectal cancer. And what we also know is more fibre is better. More fibre means greater reduction of risk. And just some of the other physiological effects directly about fibre. Obviously, it decreases intestinal transit time and increases store bulk and consistency. And it also can help to reduce cholesterol, particularly the LDL cholesterol, which is so harmful. And it helps to reduce postprandial blood glucose and insulin, among other things.
So how much fibre do we need in our lives? You know, are most people getting enough fibre?
No, is the short answer. So the European Food Safety Authority recommend that 25 grams of fibre a day are needed for normal laxation. But they also say that additional benefits to health, and that is reducing risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and also possibly improving weight, are conferred with higher intakes. And this is why in the UK, the government's Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition, SACN, they actually recommend that we should aim for 30 grams of fibre a day. Now, in the UK, adults are currently achieving about 19 grams a day, of which, just for in passing, only about 1.5 grams is coming from fruit. And only 9% of adults are actually meeting that 30 gram a day recommendation. And globally, the figure is less than 20 grams as well.
That's quite shocking, isn't it?
It is shocking, yes, yeah, and it's very worrying. I mean, I've been around for quite a few years, and we have always, as nutritionists, been trying to recommend that people increase their fibre intakes, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. And if you look at things like laxative sales, they're just phenomenal. And of course, that is at one end of the spectrum. In 2015, some £42 million a year was spent on prescribed laxatives, and another 50 million on over-the-counter remedies on
top.
That's
extraordinary, isn't it?
It's just crazy, yes, yes. And the thing is that a balanced diet with plenty of fruit and vegetables and whole grains, that would solve the problem.
Why aren't people eating enough fibre? What's the, if you dig deep into the behavioural aspects of this, why don't people eat enough fibre?
I think there's many reasons. I mean, one, there's a socioeconomic divide, and it's quite clear that people in lower income groups don't tend to have as much fruit and vegetables. There's a perception that they're more expensive, but I think a lot of it is ingrained in eating habits passed down from generation to generation, unfortunately. And I think also it's a very difficult thing to explain, but unless you have outright constipation or diarrhea, which are the extremes, what actually is a normal bowel habit? A lot of people's perception of a normal bowel habit is what they've always had. But if you ask people how much fruit and veg, how much fibre they eat, as a dietitian, if you do a dietary assessment, somebody can tell you, oh yes, I eat plenty of fruit and vegetables. But actually, when you do that dietary assessment, you can see that they're not having anywhere near enough, and the figures are telling us we're not achieving those fibre intakes. So the reality is that people's perception of what is a normal laxation is probably way lower than what is optimal for good health. And I think that's a lot of the problem. And so, for instance, with prunes, people say, oh, I don't like eating too many prunes. They give me wind and bloat me up. Well, that perhaps is more normal. Not normal, but it's more ideal in terms of good health than they have been accustomed to, and that perhaps is part of the problem.
So if we want to increase our fibre intake, what foods and what diets will help us achieve that?
Diets like the Mediterranean diet, we hear an awful lot about, because they are perfect in terms of increasing fibre intake. So we're talking about more whole grains, more legumes, nuts and seeds, vegetables and salads and fruits, and essentially a more plant-based diet. We're not recommending necessarily that we should be following a vegetarian or vegan diet. We don't need to go to those extremes, but a good meat and two veg eater needs to become a meat and four veg eater, basically. And that would undoubtedly help. But achieving 30 grams of fibre a day is actually very difficult. And there was a nice dietary modelling study carried out by the British Nutrition Foundation that looked into this. And they found that following current food-based dietary recommendations, that's basing meals on starchy foods, choosing whole grain vegetables, and eating five a day fruit and vegetables, that would get us up to about 22 grams of fibre. So that's way
quite a long way away from 30 grams.
Exactly. Yeah. And in order to achieve 30 grams of fibre, we really need to include high fibre snacks. And these are the seeds and nuts and the dried fruit, they were specifically mentioned, and high fibre foods such as pulses. And the paper actually concludes that instead of five a day, we really need to be aiming for eight portions of fruit and veg a day. So if we look at fruit and veg intake, what we find is that people are falling way short of fruit and veg intake as well. And of that, dried fruit probably makes up about a teaspoon. We're currently eating about a teaspoon on average of dried fruit, and yet dried fruit could be helping to contribute. And there's one other thing that I think is very striking. If we look globally at deaths and burden of disease due to different risk factors, it's very, very surprising, but diets low in fruit, this is on a global scale, diets low in fruits comes third in the ranking. That's behind high blood pressure and smoking or secondhand smoking.
That's quite dramatic, isn't it?
Very dramatic. And I think diets low in vegetables and whole grains is way down the list. So I think that's really interesting. And so what it's saying is that we really should be focusing on upping our fruit and vegetables, and in particular the fruit within that. And dried fruit there could be very beneficial because of its convenience. It's all year round. And it may be just easier for people who, you know, find eating an apple a day boring, but popping a few dried fruits with a few nuts as a snack between meals would go a long way to help increase their fibre intake.
And not all fruit are created equal. I'm sitting here with a bowl of grapes and a few blueberries, but mainly grapes. Now, grapes, they're lovely, but there's practically no fibre in them at all, is there?
Oh, there is some fibre in them. And when you, I think the thing is, if we start analysing one fruit against another or one vegetable against another, that's when I think it all gets out of hand.
I very much believe
we need a common sense approach. And if we want to encourage people to have more of the right foods, we really need to allow a bit more free choice. We get hung up on the nitty-gritty scientific detail and I think miss the big picture. So we need big messages about the food groups, if you like, and leave people the choice.
Yeah. Okay, so if dried fruits are a pretty useful source of fiber, but I mean, they're quite high in sugar, aren't they? So what do we need to be aware of?
Yes, well, this again is another myth. If we go back to sort of what is a dried fruit, you've got traditional dried fruits. These are the ones that have been consumed since, evidence goes back to 4000 BC. Raisins were one of the first fruits, foods to be preserved. So traditional dried fruits, these have no added sugar by definition. So we're talking about dates, figs, prunes, raisins, apricots, currants, peaches, apples, pears, and so on. But you have a separate group of dried fruits, and these are sugar infused. So they're infused with either a sucrose syrup or fruit juice concentrates. And these are blueberries, cranberries, cherries, strawberries, and mangoes. And unfortunately, they sort of blur. They've confused the picture somewhat. And then, of course, you've got candied fruits, papayas, and pineapples. And now we have a lot of processed fruit snacks as well. And unfortunately, although they have fruit in the title, other than that, they really should be considered more like confectionery because of the other ingredients, including the sugar that they have added. But if you look at, just focus on the traditional dried fruits, these really are just like fresh fruit with some of the water removed. And they behave like that in terms of the contribution to health.
So, Kevin, do you have any information about consumer trends in gut health and immunity?
Yes, indeed. What we're seeing is that there's a huge growth in both of those areas. A search on Google Trends reveals that searches for gut health, both worldwide and in individual markets, have increased exponentially in recent years. Mintel research from last year shows almost 7 in 10 consumers recognize gut health as essential to overall health. And in our consumer research across a number of countries in Europe and Asia, the most important factors when buying food in general, first of all, the number one reason, of course, is taste. But then below that, foods that have good sources of vitamins and minerals and a good source of fiber are increasingly important. And foods that are good for gut health was important for more than 8 in 10 consumers. That's both in China, Japan, Europe, as far over as Canada. And of course, the growing importance for all markets is our foods that are good for the immune system as well. Again, what we're seeing is for Google searches within the food and drink category, searches for immune system have stepped up significantly this year, as you'd expect. And then research by Euromonitor demonstrates that 1 in 2 of every immunity seeker prefers foods which naturally help their immune system, as opposed to, say, for example, fortified foods or supplements. So what we're getting to, I think a really good area where if we can get a triple win, where we can meet the needs of consumers looking for gut health and immune boosting foods that come from natural sources, that is good for business as well, and also good for society, where we can help our healthcare system by encouraging more consumers to have fiber-rich foods, then I think it's a great win for everybody.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about the board and about your aims for it?
The California Prune Board represents around 800 farmers and growers who grow plums in the fertile valleys of California. And then also the almost 30 handlers who take the best of those plums, they dry them, and they make them into tasty, succulent prunes. It was created in 1952, and it really exists to bring the good news and the nutrition of California prunes to more people all around the world. In terms of our aims, well, we love it when more people enjoy the health benefits of California prunes and enjoy the taste of the premium quality fruit. We appreciate it when more importers, wholesalers, and retailers choose to stock California prunes as a way to grow their business. And we can help them through regular marketing support and through nutrition research. And then finally, but really importantly, we help the farmers through research into sustainability and crop management.
And just because I'm fascinated by process and by how things are made, how do you make a prune?
That's a really good question, Stefan. So effectively, it starts off in the plum trees of the plum orchards in the rich, fertile valleys in California. And then all year round, the farmers tend to the crops. And around August each year, they will harvest the crops. They harvest them in a very specific way to keep the fruit as intact as possible. They'll manage it to make sure they get the largest possible fruits, plums, and prune the trees in order to achieve that. And then they take those plums, they'll wash them in water that comes down from the mountains in California, and then they put them into drying tunnels. And those tunnels gradually dry the plums. And they're very clearly and sensitively humidity and temperature controlled in order to get the best possible dried fruit afterwards.
And so you're just removing as much of the moisture and you leave behind all of the fiber and the sugars, I guess.
Absolutely. All of the nutrients stay within that. So one plum from the tree is equivalent to one prune.
I think we normally think about prunes as a snack, but how else can they be used?
You're not alone, Stefan, in associating prunes as a snack. We've conducted consumer research across Asia, Europe, Middle East, to North America. And our research shows that across a number of those countries, the number one way to enjoy prunes currently are as a snack. Around half to two-thirds of consumers are eating them in this way. But consumers are also using prunes as an ingredient in recipes. And the beauty is that they can be used in sweet recipes. For example, they pair really, really well with chocolate. So they're delicious to add to cakes and chocolate brownies. But they're also great for savory dishes too. So they add some beautiful taste and texture to a lamb tagine, for example.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's gorgeous. We work with a celebrity chef. He's recently created a dish with chicken supreme, California prunes and a brandy sauce. And it's just gorgeous. So that sweet and savory use within dishes is becoming more and more prevalent. And then another huge growth area and a really big opportunity area, I think, for more people to do this is to add prunes to their breakfast. So whether that's on cereal, granola or porridge, adding California prunes is a great way to start the day. And it taps into a trend that we're seeing where people do add dried fruits, nuts, even some spices to their bowls of cereal in the morning to bring them to life. And that can only be a good thing.
Now, are there other health benefits associated with prunes rather than just gut and gut fibre? What sort of new research are we seeing in this area?
Yes, well, the main area of interest for prunes is within bone health, and this is actually very exciting. There's been a whole host of animal and lab studies, and now two randomized controlled trials in humans as well, which are all important in terms of really demonstrating benefit. The first one was in 160 postmenopausal women. And they were asked to consume either, they were split into two groups and asked to consume either 100 grams of prunes or 75 grams of apple. And the different quantities were so that they met with the two groups were matched on energy, fat and fibre contents. All of these people were also asked to take calcium and vitamin D supplements, and they were asked to follow this regime for a year. And after that time, what the researchers found was that those consuming the prunes actually improved their bone mass, probably through slowing down the rate of bone turnover. Mm. So that was very significant. And some of these people were actually followed up after 5 years. It wasn't controlled, so we can't put much weight on it, but those that consume the prunes had maintained some of that bone mass after that time, which is good news. There was a separate controlled trial in 48 osteopenic postmenopausal women, and these were followed up for 6 months, similar regime. They were either given no prunes or 50 gram or 100 grams of prunes, and also everyone received calcium and vitamin D supplements. And again, what this showed was that those on the prunes fared far better in terms of their bone mineral density. And obviously we need an awful lot more research to demonstrate how significant these results are. And there is another controlled trial underway. But I think the interesting thing is that, as we've said, prunes are very high in fibres. The fibre is a substrate for our gut microbiota. And what happens is the bacteria break down the fibre and produce short-chain fatty acids. And this acid environment actually enhances calcium absorption in the gut. So it could be that that's how prunes are having this effect. But as well as that, as I've mentioned before, prunes also are a good source of vitamin K and a source of manganese. And both of these nutrients are beneficial for bones. So it could be that they're having this effect because of those, because of the fiber and because of the vitamins and minerals they have. But it's an exciting area of research and one that we're following closely.
Now, Kevin, let's have a little think about the business aspect of all this. How are California prunes and dried fruit generally performing at the moment?
So we're really pleased that California prunes, we're experiencing huge success at the moment. In the most recent financial year, the exports to key markets have grown significantly. As an example, volumes exported to the UK increased by 87% versus the year before. And I think, you know, there's a number of factors that have driven this. First of all, as we've talked about, the growth in gut health amongst consumers. So consumers are actively looking for natural foods in particular that are good for gut health. I think also during lockdown, the growth in healthy foods, which are shelf stable. So it's great news, as Jeanette was saying, that California prunes can count as one of our 5 a day or one of our recommended 8 a day. But also can last in the cupboard all year round. And that also, I think, lends to the next point around cooking from scratch. What we're seeing is once consumers buy some California prunes, once they're in the cupboard, they get used quicker, either as a snack or then as a cooking ingredient. And then thirdly, another point, I think, is the fact that provenance is a really important and growing trend. And provenance isn't just about buying local, but it's also about buying the best quality. And as an example, in some consumer research we've done in Italy, and of course Italians love their food and they're passionate about using the best ingredients. The consumer research showed that 80% of the Italians polled said that place of origin was really important. And then 75% said California prunes produce the best prunes. They see them as bigger, juicier, better tasting, and the best quality. And then significantly more of those Italians then intended to purchase California origin prunes, more so than planning to buy the local Italian ones. So I think, you know, those figures speak for themselves, really. And the good news is we expect the growth to continue. The first 2 months of the financial year, exports to the European Union have been up 5%, and exports to the UK a staggering 240%. And we expect this to continue, particularly for the UK. What we've seen is that import tariffs on California origin prunes are being reduced down from 9.6% down to 8% from the 1st of January. And we're hearing back from many people within the industry that that will really help to enable the retailers and wholesalers to choose California origin for the benefit of themselves and the benefit of their shoppers.
Now, I'm here as a journalist. It's not for me to give you a plug at all, but there are a couple of little things that I really love. And that is, so I make my own saucisse sans sec, my own salamis. And prunes in saucisse sans sec are absolutely fantastic. Because they're dried, and so you don't get that moisture content, so you don't get bacterial growth, they are absolutely perfect for it. They're really, really good. And the other thing is also sort of to add a little bit of sweetness to bread. And what you've got with the prunes compared to things like raisins and sultanas is you've got a lower surface area to volume ratio. And so you've got less of the harder skin element and more of the flesh inside it. So it's got lots of little things like that I think work really well.
It's brilliant, Stefan, that you're discovering the power of prunes within your saucisse sans sec. And we have a chef, Peter Sidwell, who we work with, who's produced some sausage rolls with California prunes, and they are to die for. They, to your point, they add absolutely something in terms of a better texture and a taste as well. And then to your point around baking and baked products, again, we've conducted some case studies where when you add California prunes and replace some of the butter and sugar within baked products, you can reduce the fat by up to 41% in chocolate muffins and reduce the sugar by up to 22% in chocolate cake. And of course, increase the fiber by up to 78% in recipes.
So, Kevin, how can dried fruit add value and and bring growth to businesses?
Naturally, Stefan, it's a critical time, and it will continue to be so for every business within food retail to look at how they can add value to businesses. And the good news is, I think dried fruits and California prunes can help by making it easy for shoppers to buy, and that's by becoming more relevant and more prominent. And I think there are probably three areas. First of all, can we attract more shoppers? I think, you know, one way to do this is to prominently display dried fruits at key times when they're most relevant, such as New Year's resolutions time and Veganuary. A second point is around how do we encourage existing shoppers of dried fruit to buy more packs? And a clear way here, I think, is to signpost on the front of the pack the fiber levels and the main health benefits. Of course, with those EFSA health and nutrient claims on the back of pack in order to substantiate those claims. And then the third way that we can help add value is by moving existing shoppers up to higher value purchases. And a great way of doing this is highlighting premium quality on packs, and that can often be through origin. So for example, with California prunes, we have the California prunes logo that retailers can use royalty free, both on pack and on websites.
Jeanette and Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters, and this episode is brought to you in partnership with the California Prune Board. You heard from Jeanette Higgs, Kevin Verbruggen, and me, Stefan Gates. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to apprenticeships. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.